And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable. Our special guest today is Bram Connolly. Bram is a DSM who turned to writing after a 20-year career with the Australian Army, retiring from the Special Forces as a major in 2011. He's the author of two works of fiction, The Fighting Season and Off Reservation. He was awarded the Distinguished Service Medal for Leadership in Combat in Afghanistan in 2010. He has also served in Somalia and Timor, and was a founding member of the Tactical Assault Group East. He has a highly successful weekly podcast and is a popular corporate speaker. Bram, welcome to Dads on the Air.
G'day, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. Bram, when you were deciding on the title of your book, The Commando Way, you were considering another title, and I'm just wondering what stops more people from following some sort of commando regime?
Yeah, well, actually, the other title was The Risk of Being Average, and I'd been a pretty average athlete, pretty average guy, pretty average intelligence. And then when I decided to write this book, I started to pen everything down, and I came to realise that perhaps, and I know this sounds narcissistic, but perhaps I was anything but average. And I think the reason for that, for the things that I achieved, was probably a lot around structure and discipline and the little 1% compounding habits that I have. And all of that seemed to amount to something else, in which is captured in the title, which is The Commando Way. It really resonates with that. That is very much what Special Forces is like.
Yes, well, the subtitle is A Special Forces Commander's Lessons for Life, Leadership and Success. That's certainly what I think we all need. But let's say you have experienced extremes of life and death, unlike perhaps most of us. Have you found that lessons are learnt best by way of a story?
Oh, absolutely. And I think they're conveyed best through storytelling. So if you imagine you're in a cave back during the caveman era, and you're saying to your young children, hey, there's this creature out there, and you start drawing it up on the wall. You know, it's got a face, it's got these two big saber teeth on it, and if you walk out in the dark, it'll rip you apart. Those kids don't have to have seen the saber-toothed tiger to know that that thing is going to be dangerous, because their parents have told them it is, and they've visualised it in their mind's eye through storytelling. So for me, that storytelling really is a vehicle of, hey, this is some pretty outrageous, dangerous stuff, and this is what happens. This is the sort of leadership thing that happens in and around this stimulus. Let me tell you the story about it, and now, in your mind's eye, you know these lessons to be true.
Well, I'm sure you have a wealth of stories after those 20 years in the Army, but I was wondering, did you find in your Army service that initiative was rewarded?
Leadership is a really interesting thing in the Australian Defence Force, because, you know, to be a leader, you need to have influence. And so you see a lot of young soldiers who are up and coming, and they show initiative, but they also show this amazing influence over their peers. And you would almost say that you can identify born leaders through that. Then what happens is, as you go through the ranks, you start to have this instrument of authority. And that instrument of authority, sometimes those people who have that influence dissipates, it disappears, because they're starting to use more and more authority. So it's a really interesting sort of dichotomy in the way that leaders work.
And I suppose the other side of that in some ways, but look, we often hear about mateship in the Australian Armed Forces, and there's that famous statue in France. What does mateship mean to you?
I think at the end of it, the core of everything comes down to that mateship between guys in the teams or men and women in their platoons and squadrons. I remember standing before we got on a helicopter to go in to do an assault on an enemy stronghold, and I was looking around at the guys in my platoon, and the story that I wanted to convey to them was less around nationalism. It was less around the Australian flag. It was more about the person to the left and right of them, because at the end of the day, that's the person who's going to be either with them or not with them. And so we have to put in our best effort for each other. And so I think that mateship, there's a reason why we focus so heavily on making high-performing teams through going through arduous training and selection together, so that those bonds of mateship are really reinforced.
Have you noticed more of this mateship quality in the Australian makeup than perhaps in other countries?
No, not necessarily. I think that perhaps the Australian culture is different because of the idiom of "she'll be right, mate," and also the fact that we don't like the tall poppies as we cut them down. So our cultural makeup is different than some of the other armies that I've been fortunate enough to serve with. But you can see those friendly bonds, the camaraderie that they all have together. I think mateship permeates through any of those teams that are going into harm's way together. It's just that our culture is a little bit different. And so I think that's where the ANZAC narrative really comes from, is that they had the mateship initially, but they also had something else. They had a different, a more stoic culture, a very strong underpinning of men from the land. But I think that still resonates in today's, especially in today's infantry battalions. I see it whenever I talk to anyone in the infantry battalions, for sure.
Bram, in your own life, you've had the sadness of a distant father. Do you think that the army perhaps became your family after that experience?
No doubt that I replaced that absence with other male role models. Absolutely no doubt in my mind at all. And an institution which was a comforting over time became a very comforting institution.
And of course that has some risks when you come out of the army. You came out of the army in 2011. Did you have some difficulties then in readjusting into, you know, normal civilian life?
You know, look, I hate the victim narrative. I'm a result of every choice and decision that I've ever made, whether they be good or bad. There's no doubt that I came away from the Australian Defence Force with some separation anxiety. I hadn't been a civilian. I didn't have a Medicare card, and I'd never been to a dentist outside of the army. So, life was a little bit different. But just like any other challenge, I just took it head on and strode in towards the darkness, and it became light. I'm not one for sort of reminiscing over poor me. But generally, I think most people have to know what they're about to contend with when they leave the Defence Force, when they leave the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. They have to know what it is that they're walking into.
I'm sure you you'd be able to inspire these people leaving the Army that there's another life outside without perhaps that security. We've reached a stage of the interview where we ask our guests to pick a song. So, Bram Connolly, Bram is the author of The Commando Way. Bram, would you like to pick a song for us?
Yeah, I had about 100 stacked up that I was thinking about using, but I thought It's My Life, Bon Jovi. And the reason that I chose that was because it was the first song that was played that my son and I went to a concert together, and he's such a big Bon Jovi fan that when they came on the stage and started playing, he immediately jumped his tent. He immediately jumped up onto the seat and started screaming and singing along, and everyone in the rows either side just started clapping and laughing. But just it's great to see someone full of life and energy that has no worries.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted. My life is now or never. I ain't gonna live forever. stood their ground.
That was It's My Life by Bon Jovi, specially chosen for us today by our guest Bram Connolly, who's the author of a new book called The Commando Way. Bram, at one stage you describe how you've overcome some of the barriers that you've faced. How did you overcome your fear of heights? Because that's something I share with you.
This is still in my family. This is still something they can't believe. You know, I'm terrified of heights. I don't walk to the edge of buildings. We went to Karajini. Up in Western Australia, and there's all these steep ravines, and I wouldn't go near the edges. I guess, long story short, there was an opening for someone to do the mountain warfare course, which required them to do the rock climbing course prior to that. And so I went, you know what, why don't I just face this head on? So I immersed myself in it, didn't tell anyone I was scared of heights. And yeah, I guess knowledge dispels fear, as they say.
Yeah, facing your fears and perhaps, you know, signing up for rock climbing and you know, going to the other extreme in some ways of overcoming that fear.
Yeah, the Army has a great way of taking an amazing civilian sport and placing a lot of heavy equipment and strict rules on it. So, yeah, I found myself doing multi-pitch, flat-faced rock climbing in very slippery shoes with a lot of equipment, but doing that for a few months, and then up and doing snow and ice climbing and crevices and ravines in the Alps. So, yeah, I think facing it head on is probably the best thing for me, to be fair.
Did you get to enjoy jumping out of aeroplanes?
It's different than climbing. It's a different thing. It's a different sensation. You don't get the vertigo that you get. The door opens up. Generally, huge parachute opens up above you if you're doing static line. So you don't get the same vertigo that you get with a cliff. You know, a parachute above you opens up if you're doing static line, and then you just gently float down to earth. But I will say that I've done a lot of parachute jumps. I just don't recall if I've ever done a day jump, because I've usually got my eyes so tightly shut on the way out the door. I think they've all been night jumps.
That's one way of dealing with it. Yeah, keep your eyes closed, I suppose.
This Special Forces guy's a coward by the end of this interview, I think.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Look, you talk about the decision-making process, and obviously that's part of being a leader. And I like that little acronym you had, OODA, O-O-D-A. So I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Oh, sure. And look, that's not mine, and that was referred to in the book and clearly stated that it's not something that I came up with. But the OODA loop, you know, Orientate, Observe, Decide, Act, was designed in the 1950s by an American Air Force commander, pilot, to be able to deal with other enemy in dogfights. But I do think it's a very good way of us being situationally aware. I think there's a lot about decision-making that doesn't get done now by people because they don't take the time to sit back and think. They just respond to stimulus. And if we can get people to actually sit there and go, okay, this is what this decision is going to look like, this is the second order effects, this is the third order effects, now how do I mitigate any of the risks, how do I reinforce any of the wins, and how do I make sure that I'm not reinforcing failure? I do think that people need to spend more time actually thinking about their situations.
There's a tendency too much to go with a gut feeling rather than that sort of logical analysis that you're talking about.
Yeah, and analysis is definitely the way to go, but gut feeling can get you out of trouble as long as you have already visualised prior to that.
And you talk about following that process, that OODA, O-O-D-A, Observe, Orient, Decide, Act. You need to get, I suppose, faster and faster. You can't spend 10 minutes if you're under attack in the middle of the desert.
No, and that's correct. And, you know, when people ask me about high-intensity combat and how we deal with it, what I like to say, and I like to talk to young officers about this in particular, or anyone in emergency services and the like, is you have to be able to triage the stimulus, and the best way to do that is to have been able to do it the day before or the night before or the week before in your planning, so that you're actually planning for the worst case and you have these things set in place so that you can respond. So when something happens, you can go, if this happens, then I'm going to do this. And so it becomes less about having to think about it in the moment and more about putting a little bit of a piece of a plan in place because something has happened. And, you know, and I'll give you an example for that. We knew we were flying into enemy territory. We knew that the aeromedical evacuation helicopters weren't going to be able to reach us in time if we had someone who was shot. So we just built it into our plan that our insertion aircraft would stay in place for the first 45 minutes while they still had fuel, and they would loiter a few kilometres away. And sure enough, we had two guys with gunshot wounds in the first, I think, 10 minutes. And so those aircraft became critical to saving those guys' lives. If they had a return to base, we would have had a big problem because we wouldn't have got these guys out within the golden hour to get to a medical facility. So that plan was made the day before. So we didn't have to make that plan on the fly on the day of the battle. It was already in place, and it was just a matter of triggering that response.
Another aspect of your procedures and the way you act is to have your physical fitness. Is that something that you've always driven yourself to do in lots of different ways?
Oh, look, absolutely. And, you know, I can't stress enough that the more physically fit you are, the less you have to rely on your mental toughness. It doesn't have to kick in so early. And so I think that for all of us living these busy lives, you know, we've got to take the time to work on ourselves first. Make sure you're in optimum physical condition. Enough sleep. The more sleep you have, the better your diet's dialed in, then your resilience is higher. You don't make rash decisions. You don't jump down people's throats. You don't emotionally respond so fast. And I saw this. I saw this over years and years. We knew you had to have enough sleep. You had to have your diet on point. You had to be able to be physically fit to do the job so that it wasn't a burden or a stress on you, because when everything turns bad, those are the things that you rely on first.
I guess you look to get that physical fitness from things like you talk about going on 5K runs and 10K for 10 days, different exercises. But I'm also intrigued that, you know, when it's the weather's appalling or things are particularly tough, you relish that and you're out there, you want to get out there for a run to sort of experience that in all in nature, in all its in its bad parts as well.
We forget what it's like to live the human condition, because we're so sheltered from the outside world, from the weather, from the cold, from the heat. The more extreme the weather is, I just take that as a trigger to get outside into it and to train. So the other day, for instance, I parked my car in the city and there was a thunder squall came through, and rather than drive home, I ran home in it. I think it's just a matter of saying yes more when things are tough and resetting your frames of reference. So for me to walk, you know, three or four streets now in light, gentle rain to go to a meeting doesn't actually bother me as much as everyone else around me, because the night before that, I'd run home in a thunderstorm. I just think we need to think more about why we do things.
A lot of your book is dealing with leadership. You talked about the three styles of leadership, a directive, a participative, and a delegative. Could you just take us quickly through that?
Yeah, and I think that you'll find that those three styles have been, you know, they have really been studied ad nauseum in leadership. Delegative, the person who delegates the tasks. Participative, you know, they participate and get in amongst it. And directive is like, this is the way to do it. Let me show you how. And there's different people will adopt different versions of those styles. But the one thing I'll say, that the thing that I think is missing from a lot of leadership, especially in Australia, is around the emotional connectedness with the other person and actually understanding your other person emotionally and the place that they're in and the things that have gone on before them. And I think that work, leaders need to do more of that work, because leadership isn't actually about getting an end result and the balance sheets. Leadership is actually all about people.
Do you think our current politicians, do you feel comfortable calling people like Scott Morrison and New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian, would they benefit perhaps from your take on leadership?
Yeah, look, I'd love to speak to them about, you know, authentic leadership. I think the Prime Minister, given what we've been going through over the last few months, has actually done a very good job under very trying conditions. I think they all have been really rattled by this. It's a difficult situation that we find ourselves in. But at the end of the day, what we all need now is someone to stand up and say, here's the vision for the future. Here is the glide path that we're going to take. This is the piece that you can play in that. Now, who's with me? Let's get this done. It's got to be positive. If it's not positive, it's no longer leadership. And, you know, we can see on the news reports how much stress they're under. I think in some cases we need to give our politicians a bit more of a break given what they're going through. To be fair, I probably just lost half your audience. Sorry.
Look, a perennial question that seems to come up in connection with leadership too is, and I'm thinking perhaps in terms of football teams and coaches and whatever, but can you be friends with your team if you're the leader?
Yeah, I love this question. I've actually really struggled with this over the years myself. My short answer is yes, 100% yes. The as with everything in life, it's really grey and quite complex. So not to get too, you know, read the book to work out how, I guess, you know, but to give you a quick overview, it takes a hell of a lot of maturity on both parts, and it takes a conversation to sit down and go, hey, look, I know we're good friends. You know, I'm now in this leadership position. I have to be able to provide purpose, motivation, direction to the team, and I need you to act as a team member. I need you to put our friendship to one side while I'm leading, if you can. But remember, as I said before, leadership is about people. So it's almost, in my mind, it's almost like you want to get everyone to be your friends. You want to build a fan base of people. They don't necessarily have to like everything you do, but they have to understand that you have their best interests at heart when you do it. But then when you've got your best friend in your team, as I found, that can be something quite special in some occasions, and can be quite restrictive in other occasions. It's a difficult thing to get right.
And speaking of difficult things, Bram, I wonder if I could ask you, what did you feel when you heard about the Commission of Inquiry into the Special Forces in Afghanistan?
Oh, I think, like most Australians, I was really, really disturbed at some of the reports that were coming out. Again, I'm not any more privy to that than what anyone else is. So I'm going to be watching with interest as well. while the report clarifies, and we see, and we've got to remember everyone's innocent until proven guilty. So, you know, if there's a case to answer, then 100% let's see how this plays out. There's rules. You know, we are a Western nation. We have the rules of armed conflict, and we abide by those rules. And if they've been broken, then our society deserves to know why those rules were broken.
Now, we're speaking with Bram Connolly, who is the author of The Commando Way. Bram, you also have a very successful podcast. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, look, the Warrior You podcast is my gift to my kids, I guess, to my two sons. I wanted them to hear their dad talking to people about leadership, resilience, human optimization, and they can follow my path of growth on the podcast. It's had 250,000 downloads, I think, to date. I've done 100 episodes. Season 2 is about to come out. And I've learned more, I think, about leadership through the podcast than perhaps I learned while I was in Special Forces, because some of the guests are just, they are incredible, and from all walks of life, from academics to business people, sporting people. Yeah, so it's a real passion project, and I'm hoping that we can continue with some investment to make it a rather large show and perhaps get it onto YouTube in the future.
So we'll have full details of Bram's podcast. It's called Warrior You. And you can find that in your favourite search engine. I think they're up to episode 100, so that's well worth checking out next time you're looking for a podcast. Well, that's all we have time for today, but I hope everyone has found it as inspirational as I have, and I would recommend the book, The Commando Way, by our special guest, Bram Connolly. Bram, it just remains for me to give a special thank you. Thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
And look, don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.